Mr. Cock from Reel 11. So what happened when you got back to Hong Kong?
We got back to
summarise, you know.
We got back to Hong Kong, and being captain of the side party, Jenny come aboard as we got back into Hong Kong, and she was a Chinese woman, and she had young Chinese girls and women in her boat who worked for the side party. She'd put a boat at your disposal, and she'd help you to paint the ship's side and clean it. The commander used to give her permission to do this, and she had real papers from the Navy with all the ships she'd served. And what she used to get in return, the girls would bring in board big tins with an angle on, and at dinner time they'd be put down at mess deck, the seaman's mess deck, the stokers, marines, barrack room, and all the gas food would go in there, and all the gas suite would go in another one. And she would take this and sell it ashore, apparently. And this is all she got for her. But she had permission of the commander and master at arms to come aboard, you see, and do this. And I used to use her boat for whenever I wanted for painting or cleaning ship's side. And she done quite a good job. And it was, everybody used to marvel. Before the girls used to come inboard, she used to ask me for hot water. I used to give her hot water. And the girls used to wash and clean themselves and comb their hair lovely. And they were spotless when they came in onto the ship. Anyway, of a night, if I didn't go ashore, myself and another AB from Liverpool, a one badge LR3, he was the layer of 8 shutters. And another lad, he was from the aftermess deck, Gunnar Gartzell, we called him. He was a young AB. His father had been a regimental sergeant major, you see. He'd been all over the world, in schools. The three of us used to march the deck together, getting fresh air of a night. And one particular day, this AB from Liverpool, he said to me, "I'm leaving the ship, Schoon Scouse, I'm going home. My relief has come aboard as a young lad," he said, at young LR3. So, apparently there'd been several reliefs come for people to be relieved and they would go back to the UK. Anyway, we were going to do a special shoot with American 5-inch shells, main armaments. Now, we were amazed because our shells on all our type of ship, Dido-class cruisers, had been so active during the war. And we were amazed, why are we going to use an American shell? Anyway, it was explained to us that the nose fuse was so sensitive. If you were firing at a target, an aircraft, say, and your range was too great, you were going past this, when it got near the aircraft, it exploded. That's how sensitive it was. So we goes out of Hong Kong to do the shoot the next day. But before we went out, the captain sent for this able seaman from Liverpool and said, "With this shoot being so important, I suggest you stay in the turret and as the layer and let this lad stay out for the experience." So he goes out, gets outside of Hong Kong into the South China Sea to do the shoot. I'm on the captain of the pom-pom, sea turret. The idea was, A turret was to fire first. The left gun fired of A turret. The right one blew up internally. Blew up. And what happened was, it killed the delayer, that lad from Liverpool. So instead of him coming home, he lost his life. He was the only one in the church who lost his life. He was the layer, the gun layer. And his name and ship is actually engraved in Liverpool Town Hall, Roll of Honour.
How much longer did you stay with her?
Stayed with her a bit after that, because what happened was we came back in. All kinds of top brass came aboard to see what had happened. And all kinds of dockyard officials come to inspect the gun. I've got a photograph of the gun without it, and I saw it there that I could show you. And after a while, they took the gun out, and they put a dummy one in its place, like a, so that it wouldn't look odd going to sea with just one gun. And the rumour was that we were going to do another shoot again, test these shells again. So the Marines in the after turret told the captain of the Marines they would not go in the turret with these shells. So the captain of the Royal Marines went and talked to our ship's captain and told him. So we had to go ashore then and tell the CNC that the Marines refused to man the turrets. So they scrapped the idea then. And then we went down to, from there we went down to Sydney then.
You've gone to Hong Kong about March.
It'd be towards the end of March. We went down to Sydney. Now we were taking the great Levanti with him, his wife and his daughter. Some magician, yeah. So on the way down, we called in New Guinea. Now, it was very interesting, this, getting into New Guinea. There's a lot of black Americans in there, and the great Levanti's daughter was very pretty, and you can imagine the heat. She was only in, like, a bikini or whatever, and all her toenails painted red. And when we tied up in New Guinea and these alongside the wall and these Yanks in there, our Marines were on the toes keeping off the ship. And what amazed me in New Guinea, I've seen a type of tribe there I've never seen before. The black hair, they had a red dye right through it, right through the middle. This particular tribe. From New Guinea, we went into Sydney, tied up at Wallamaloo Dock again. And we're going to have a ship's dance because of all the... Apparently all the ships in the fleet had come back and had a dance because of the girls, the people who'd married the families and so on. Anyway, it was on a Friday night and I was picked leading hand in charge of the patrol that was the patrol of the dance. So the commander sent for me and he said to me, the chief officer supply, chief writer, they're going to be responsible for organising and running this dance. And under no circumstances are you or your patrol to drink any beer or anything. And at the end of the night, they would see that you had a drink. So, on the night of the dance in question, Everything went fine. I stayed mainly outside in it with a couple of the patrol, white belts and gaiters on. Made sure only the right people of our ship and the guests went on into the hall. And this went on. Occasionally I'd go up and see everything was up and all right in the dance. And everything went fine. The chief riser, chief supply, they'd tell, oh, it's great, everything's going great. There wasn't a thing out of place. The night was very good. When it come time to leave the hall, and it started coming out so many at a time, a two bad JB, Abel Seaman Tomlinson, who played for the ship with me, come down without his hat, you see. So me realising he couldn't go back to the ship without his hat, being properly dressed, I pointed this out to him. And out of nowhere, came a Aussie police sergeant and policeman, out of nowhere. And he said, they're all drinking. They're all drunk. He's not going back up there at all. And you're not going back. You can imagine my horror. I hadn't had a drink all night, all my patrol. And we were all thrown in a Black Maria. As true as I'm sitting on this seat. That was Abel Seaman Tomlinson, just because he didn't have his hat on. All my patrol and myself were bundled in a Black Maria and taken back to our ship in Wallamaloo Dock. When I got back aboard the ship, I said to the officer of the day, I want to see a doctor right away, and all my patrol does. So he said, why are you requesting this to me? He was a lieutenant, RN, Royal Navy. I said, because I haven't had a drink, neither has my patrol. My commander knows that. The chief writer knows that. The chief officer, the chief supply knows it. I said, but I want to clear myself. I've got a hook and a badge here, which I've worked hard to keep. And I'm not going to have Australian policemen who'd come on the scene looking for glory having us branded as drunkards, and we haven't touched a drop all night. So he went and he eventually fetched the doctor who certified that none of us were drunk. Next morning, our captain went ashore and he threw the book at the police in Sydney. And that's as true as I'm sitting on this seat there. The Australian police spoils a good night for everybody by acting heavy-handed like that. There was no need for it. Everybody on the ship knew it. The captain was there, the commander. There was not an inch of trouble that night. And I'd done a bloody good job.
Now, what happened next? We'd better move along a bit. What happened? How did you leave the
Well, program? What happened was, we still had camouflage on the ship. And we're going back to Hong Kong. We still had camouflage on the ship. So the commander sent for me and he said, if I give you 18 men, how many days would you paint the ship? I said I'd paint it if I picked the 18 men in 3 days. So he told me to go away and pick the 18 men, which I did do, and he scrutinised it. But what I'd done, I picked 6 from the red watch, 6 from the white watch, 6 from the blue watch. And we'd done it in actually 2.5 days. And he gave us a make amend the next day, the third day.
What happened when you got to Hong Kong? You went back to Hong Kong?
We went back to Hong Kong. And after a while, the captain told us we could either do a sort of Hobart or a tour of New Zealand. So we had a vote and everybody naturally voted for New Zealand. So we set off down to Sydney again And we done this tour of New Zealand, you see. The first place we called at was Dunedin. We were there for 5 days. Mostly Scotch people who had emigrated there. And various things happened. There was various functions put on for us. I played against the Scotch 11 for the ship's team. From there we went to Timaru. And then we went on to Wellington, Windy Wellington, he called it. Then we went round from there, Auckland, New Zealand. That's where their naval base is. And we'd been there a while, and all of a sudden we started living on the ship, but going into their barracks for our meals and even our room over the dinner hour. And then the captain said to us, there's a nasty rumour going around that we're handing the ship over to the New Zealand Navy and we're going home. And it's happened. At the end of May...
46.
The end of May, yeah. We left there and we boarded the Arawa, a Sean Saville blind boat. Harawa. The Arawa. To take us back to Tilbury in London. The dock, that's where we're going. So the whole of the ship's company went. We handed it over to the New Zealand Navy. And when we got into Tilbury and boarded the train, what happened? We flew our pennon off pennon from the train all the way down to Plymouth. And I believe it was the first time it's ever been done, a paying off pennant of a ship flying from a train. And we went into Plymouth. We got into the Drake very late at night. And
this would be June, would it?
Yeah, what we had to do, we had to sleep in the gymnasium that night, the whole ship's crew. So what we'd done, we had our bags and hammocks, and each one of us, we formed groups to protect our each one's gear, to make sure none of our gear got, you know. And the next morning, after wash, shave, breakfast, doctor and dentist we passed. And then we got leave then. Well, when I went before the division officer for foreign service leave, I said to him, Mr. Churchill has given us 14 days end of war leave to be given at the commanding officer's request. I said, as we haven't had ours, what's the probability? He said, well, you're going through when you come back for AA1. So he said, I suggest you take your foreign service leave. Your AA1 course is 3 months. When you've done your 3 months, you'll be entitled to seasonal leave. Have your seasonal leave on that, and you've got a good leave. So I goes on leave, and the last day of my foreign service leave, I get a telegram. Report back to our barracks Devonport to the DFDO, which was the drafting office, and this is peacetime. So when I get back to barracks, I find out they're sending me to Leon Solon, to the Fleet Air Arm Base, to be attached to 827 Squadron.
What has?
Well, what happened was, in charge of the draft, there was a chief petty officer seaman, 3 leading seamen, which was myself, Abel Seaman McCoy, who left the renown with me, and another leading seaman, who, as we later found out, should never have been at sea. He was a survivor of the Exeter Japanese prisoner of war, he was. And he was really in a bad way. So there was the chief, 3 leading seamen, 12 able seamen, and 3 kooks, all going to be attached to 827 squadron at Leon Solent. We went to Leon Solent. Attached to this squadron.
When would this be? July? Or?
July, yeah. And
what happened?
We were there till the end of September.
And what were your duties with the 827 squadron?
Well, I wasn't doing anything really. All as I was in charge of the mess, making sure that the mess was kept clean. All around the outside was kept clean.
Outside of what? Around the Leon Solent base?
Yeah, all around the base. Had able seamen with me, keeping it clean and everything. And
that's what their job was.
Yeah, and I was supervising. I drew the rum of the day, I issue it back, and what was left, I'll take back to the office of the day. And then from there, we left to get for the last day in September. We got to Eglinton, Northern Ireland. This is where the squadron was going to do its flying, 827 squadron.
And what was the name? Eglinton?
Eglinton, Northern Ireland. It was roughly 30 miles from Londonderry. Apparently, the Fleet Air Arm had 2 bases there, Eglinton and Wordy Down. Now, when we went, we attached to the squadron. The idea was the pilots were going to do the flying there. There was all kinds of armourers and everything attached to the squadron, which I knew nothing about because I was a seaman. I wasn't, you know, never been on an aircraft carrier. I knew nothing about the routine of it.
But you weren't on an aircraft carrier.
No, but we were going to join the Triumph, brand new aircraft carrier. And what happened was, our living quarters, that was for all the armourers, the ABs and everybody, attached to the squadron, was well away from the camp. And what they'd done, they gave me a bicycle to ride from where our living quarters right down to the main, where the main working part of the camp was, such as the officers, the galley and the 2 dining halls. And I was given the job then of in charge of the 2 dining halls because there'd been a lot of trouble with the ratings in this camp. Apparently, they were getting stewed too often, and they didn't like it. And they were getting out of hand, that, you know, and my job as the leading seaman was to try and sort all this lot out.
So how long were you at Eglinton?
We did 2 or 3 weeks. And we left then to join the Triumph in Belfast, the whole squadron.
And what do you remember about, briefly, what do you remember about your time on the Triumph?
Well, what it was, she was a Chatham ship. Admiral, it was his first commander as an admiral, he was flying his flag in her. He was aboard the Cossack when Admiral Vane, you know, when he released the German prisoners, he was aboard the Cossack. And he was flying his flag in the Triumph, a brand new aircraft carrier. As going aboard, I was put in charge of the Fleet Air Arm mess tech again on the Triumph.
Now, tell me what your duties were then, for the mess tech.
My duties was making sure that the mess deck was kept clean, every mess. And making sure that when the cooks had done the job cleaning the messes and the sweepers had kept all, done all the mess, mapped it all out, was nobody come on. Well, it was very surprising to me to from a ship, a carrier, because apparently in the Fleet Air Arm, when they're on the shore base and on a ship, as soon as they finish anything to do, no matter what time of day it is, they make for the mess deck. Well, they're not allowed on the ship to do that. You've got to let it be clean and only go in at certain times. And these were coming on the mess deck. I couldn't. I was getting no commotion out of my tone. You know, it was something. I just detested it. You know, I was a seaman. You couldn't. All they wanted to do was roam around and no respect for anything. You know, I just couldn't.
So what happened?
At the end, I was with her. I stayed on her. And one day, when I was on the upper deck, the chief gunner's mate come. It was his first ship as a gunner's mate. He was the one who used to, when I was on the Renown, we used to go ashore and scupper. He was the man in charge of the range there. And he said, "What the bloody hell are you doing here?" And I told him, I said, "McCord's here as well." He said, "It's peacetime. I've got 2 pom-poms, 8-barrel pom-poms, and not a leading seaman AA2 to man them." So McCord and I got that job. We were on that. So instead of being at aircraft handling party, I was on a pom-pom. That was me.
But well, you'd never done the handling part.
Never done it, no. Just didn't.
So you transferred to the pom-pom. Where did the Triumph go? I mean, where was she based? Briefly. No.
She went down to Med. Originally, she was going to go. Eventually, she went for 2 years to Malta, flying a flag.
Did you go with her to Malta?
No, I went to her to Jib. And he kept asking me, would I re-engage? And I said, no, I'd had enough. Wasn't my life, you know. So I come out and signed on the reserves. I was 5 years on the reserves.
When were you demobilised then? Do you know when you left?
Yeah. I left in 47, the end of 47.
December 47.
Yeah.
So you were on board more than a year.
Yeah.
From October 46th right through to December
46th. Yeah.
And what did you do in peacetime? How did you get back into peacetime life?
I found it very hard at first because I was so used to open life and that. And after a while, I went to work on the dredges in Liverpool, Mersey.
The dredges.
Yeah. And then one day I seen a liner coming in, and I said to my wife, I'm going to go back to sea. And she agreed, and I went. And I joined, done everything. I had to go through all the rigmarole.
Which line?
The Canadian Pacific, the Empress of Canada I went on. I was in charge of the boat deck on there. I used to sign on for either 3 months or 6 monthly articles, because it was only a 17-day round trip, say. 5 days to...
And how long were you on her?
18 months. And I would have stayed on her for a hell of a long time. I had a good number. Only my house kept getting burdled. And my young daughter told the wife she never lived there. I had to pack in and come ashore again.
And what did you come ashore as?
They told me to, I should stay in a ship, stay in a shore gang, working which to my regret I never did. I went and worked in a factory to my...
What as?
As an inspector, semi-skilled.
And I believe you're still a very keen member of the Royal Naval Association. Yeah. Is that important to you?
Yeah, very, very important, because you meet old friends and some you knew, and you know, it's a wonderful thing to be in. The people you meet and everything, they're all good shipmates. I know, I'm very proud to be a member of it.